from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you for joining us today. We've got a good program lined up today. Later on the show, we're going to turn our eyes to the education system, specifically how one of our more rurally located school districts is doing. We will talk to a couple of teachers from the Galesville-Ettrick-Tremplo School District. That's in the second half of today's show. But right now, it is the economy, and we're talking about how businesses are faring and how they might be faring in the future as the COVID-19 crisis continues. And we've had some adjustments this week to the shutdown and a potential path forward anyway. And we're joined to talk about all of it by Chris Hardy, who is the CEO of Seven Rivers Alliance, and Vicky Markison, who's the CEO of the La Crosse Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm very pleased to welcome you both to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Happy to be here.
Thank you for asking.
The governor just this week has announced not only an extension to the Safer at Home, but also a time, not a timeline, but a set of benchmarks that could indicate exactly how we return to business as more usual here in Wisconsin. And that's being called the Badger Bounce Back. Chris, you had a chance to view the governor's press conference. What's your first reaction to the Badger Bounce Back and how that could affect Wisconsin's business community?
Well, I think that the major point from this is that the governor is, by all intents and purposes, following the guidelines that were set by the Trump administration in terms of reopening America. And so the theme in Wisconsin, Badger Bounce Back, is how do we get ready for that, for what amounts to that phase one reopening, which I would call a real slow opening of businesses, and then moving us up to the progressive phase two and reopening everything. And part of the major focus for business is that the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and its secretary, Missy Hughes, will be leading what they call Wisconsin Ready, which is part of the Badger Bounce Back. And this is making sure that businesses are up to date and ready to reopen when that time comes. And so I think that's really important for businesses, because many businesses have been in the dark for many weeks now. And at least this will give them something to focus on, so when the green light is given, they will be ready to open their doors if they qualify.
Vicky, from the La Crosse Area Chamber of Commerce perspective, how are you reacting so far to what you understand about the future reintroduction of reopening of more businesses in Wisconsin?
The piece that we have our ear to the ground to, if you will, is the businesses. So bottom line, a lot of our restaurants, retailers have been following the payroll protection plan, the PPP. That funding has ended for now, hoping we get more federal money into the mix. So to have that coupled with the governor extending the Safer at Home order, it hit our businesses with a pretty big blow come the tail end of last week. And so the big call to action was getting a plan out of the governor. And it's great to hear that happened, because that starts to give hope for the businesses that they will reopen and they know the criteria in which they have to, let's just say, comply to get their doors back open. And so it really starts to pave that path forward.
Some businesses over the last month or so have been able to offer quite an array of services. Others have been shuttered completely. What have you heard from your clients and members and other people associated with the chamber about which industries or sectors have been the hardest hit by Safer at Home?
The restaurants that don't have a product that lends itself well for curbside or delivery. Obviously, the bars are completely shut down, and even under Trump's plan, they're the last to open. And it's the places where people go for entertainment, and it's the small self-employed businesses. So I was just talking to auto body repair place where business is pretty much non-existent. He specializes in boat repairs, actually. And they're basically seeing no income right now. And with the Wisconsin unemployment hopefully opening up tomorrow, that will give some back pay for those self-employed, those independent contractors that without people they can meet with and clients walking in the door, there's just no income there right now.
Chris, talking to people region-wide on sort of a leadership level, what are you hearing in terms of businesses that have been particularly hard hit?
Well, I would echo what Vicki said across the region. An important statistic to remember is that in our region, and I'm talking about a 14-county region in the Seven Rivers Alliance region, 95.8% of our region's employees are 49 employees or under, and there are almost 7,500 businesses with 1 to 4 employees, and that makes up 40% of our region's businesses. So small businesses have really been hit hard by this. Just because of their nature, a lot of them are food service, taverns, restaurants, and they have simply been trying to stay afloat during this. There's been a lot of frustration as well with the ability to tap into the federal resources that were allocated. Vicki mentioned the PPP. Payroll Protection Plan, which did run out of money last week. As we talk today, there's hopes that there will be more money put into that program. But I think that the challenge is how do small businesses get at that money when there are multi-million-dollar businesses that were tapping into those funds? A few thousand dollars for a small business would go a long way toward help keep it open. And so I think there's a lot of businesses hopeful that they will have a better shot at getting some of those funds the next time around.
What kind of conversations are you able to have on behalf of your constituent organizations, either through official, like lobbying channels, or through less formal conversations with leadership on a local level, a state level, even a national level, about what their needs are?
Well, we've urged the governor, even prior to his announcement today, had sent a letter, Seven Rivers Alliance and La Crosse Area Development Corporation. We had sent a letter to the governor urging him to form a committee of businesses to provide business input, and it looks like that's going to be one of the bullet points that they're doing under the WEDC plan. Under the Badger Bounce Back, and Vicki has as well. We've reached out to our congressman Ron Kine and to our senators try to let them know. Look, this is what we're hearing from businesses. How do we get this unstuck so that our businesses can have some guidance? There was a lot of confusion as well with self-employed businesses and how they qualified. And a lot of our small businesses fall under that, where they technically don't have employees. They may be a one- or two-person operation, and yet they have a hard time navigating through the bureaucracy to try to see how they can qualify for some of these funds that they are eligible for.
Vicki, on an official level, what has your outreach been like, and do you feel like it's been well-received?
Yes. The piece that businesses have been great about is sharing what they've applied for, what they have not heard back from, what they have heard back from. And so that really allows us to share out, particularly with entities wanting to provide support, with where the gap is. And I will tell you the gap. So gap being what have they secured for funding? What do they need yet? That's the gap. It's really tough to identify because things like the unemployment, where people will get back pay for when they would have been eligible for unemployment, but they can't apply until now, it creates this, the gap is immediate. They don't have any money in yet, but it's coming. And so trying to put money into helping right now is really tough because money's just stuck. It's just stuck with unemployment. Now PPP is hopefully temporarily stuck. And then there's more federal funding called the EIDL loans, which are stuck as well. There's just no funding coming out. And so trying to help their immediate needs is really challenging. And again, there are many people that want to help. We just got to figure out where's the best place.
That's Vicki Marcus and the CEO of the La Crosse Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm also speaking with Chris Hardy, the CEO of the Seven Rivers Alliance, and we're talking about the effect of COVID-19 on the economy, and we're going to continue that conversation coming up. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to get in touch with the show today or listen to a past episode, you can find information on our website, which is WPR.org/newsmakers. You can also subscribe to our podcast through your favorite podcasting app. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. Thank you very much for joining us in La Crosse, throughout the Cooley region and the Driftless area this week. I'm joined today by Chris Hardy, the CEO of the Seven Rivers Alliance, and Vicki Marcuson, the CEO of the La Crosse Area Chamber of Commerce. Before we get back into our conversation, I want to give each of you an opportunity to talk a little bit just about what your organization does and where people can find you. Let's start with you, Vicki. Tell us about the chamber, the work that you do, and where people can find your website.
Absolutely. So we were formed 152 years ago. We're an organization created by businesses and funded by membership. And so we, over the many years, make sure that our businesses are connected to the information that they need and to the other businesses in the area. We help them grow through education and advertising opportunities, and then we also advocate on their behalf. And so we cover the La Crosse County area, but of course we have other businesses that invest in us as well that are outside the county.
And Chris, tell us all about the Seven Rivers Alliance.
Well, we are an infant compared to Vicki's organization. Seven Rivers Alliance started in the early 2000s as a regional economic development alliance. Today, we represent 14 counties in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa and work on regional economic development initiatives. We're also one of 11 regional economic development organizations in the state of Wisconsin that work with the Wisconsin Economic and Development Corporation. So we get some of our funding from WEDC and also funding from members. And our goal really is to work on collaborative economic development.
And how can people find information about you? You got a website?
We do, sevenrivers.org.
Back to our conversation about how the economy is being affected by COVID-19. A lot of these businesses, it's going to be a while before things are back to normal, before they can open up. There are all kinds of health-related, public health-related benchmarks that are going to be the determining factors of which businesses are allowed to engage in which practices and when. But even if they were to open, they face challenges and different aspects of shortages in the supply chain and all kinds of different challenges when you talk about opening a business back up that's been closed because of something like an international pandemic. Vicki, do you want to talk about sort of what challenges some of your members might face as they get ready to reopen?
Absolutely. So, of course, the main concern is not helping spread COVID, correct? So the idea that our county health department is saying is the businesses that are first able to become to be aware of physical distancing, for example, and the contributing factors. Sorry, I'm struggling with this one. The contributing factors to COVID spreading will fare better. So bottom line, it's looking at how do we get cloth masks, not medical masks, in the hands of more people, whether those are people walking in or the people working. How do we get hand sanitizer to those businesses? Both of those, of course, are a supply problem. Those cloth masks are handmade, homemade. Hand sanitizers in hot demand right now. And it's things like putting acrylic barriers between the cashier and the individuals, again, so that we're not spreading. Even businesses that might be able, through fire code, to have 50, 100 people in a restaurant, for example, may only be able to have 10 to 15 to 20, and is that financially viable for them, or do they really have to wait until we're able to get 50 people into a restaurant and then eventually 100? And so these are not just supply problems, but it's math problems too. It's financial problems of, can you afford that type of overhead being open if you can't be at the capacity that you're used to being open to? And then there's another contributing factor here, which just came to mind, and that is unemployment is actually causing some difficulties for our businesses. So as they're wanting to bring people back, the amount that's being paid through unemployment is so high that some of the employees are saying, can I actually stay on unemployment rather than come back to work? And so these are all components that add complexity to just even just dialing one on the dial, as opposed to a light switch going off, is the analogy. Dialing one on the dial where some of the businesses can open up, there's some challenges there that didn't exist, and it's not as easy as just opening the door.
Chris, what's your reaction to as businesses start opening up? You were talking earlier about the number of businesses that are sole proprietors or maybe involve just one or two people. And if you have to talk about retrofitting, you know, different customer interface type things and spread that additional cost over a business that just has one or two people generating income, that's got to be a pretty expensive proposal.
It will be, and I think that's going to be the challenge. The next challenge for businesses is, once we know what the guidelines are, and you get the green light to say, okay, you can open your doors if you meet this criteria, then that's going to have to be a choice by the business. Can they spend that money? Does it make sense for them to spend that money? Or, as Vicki pointed out, do they just stay closed until later on? The problem is that we don't know how long later on is, and that's the fundamental challenge with all of this, is that if there was certainty in the future, businesses could plan for that. But it's very difficult, particularly if you're trying to slowly reopen. How do you call those employees back? How do you balance that? Reopening your doors versus having employees not being productive, all huge challenges layered on top of the challenges that small business owners have to do under normal circumstances.
Let's talk about that idea about reopening and returning to normal and the timeline of that and that balance that you were just talking about, because some political commentators have been criticized pretty publicly about insisting that there has to be a specific date in mind at which time the public would know that this is going to be over. But we all know public health doesn't work that way. So how do we strike that balance between doing what's right for public health, but realizing that this is having devastating impacts on people's income?
Small businesses and all businesses want to reopen with the health and safety of their employees and customers in mind, and that opening before those health standards would be met would be counterproductive and frankly set us back, and all of the weeks of sacrifice that businesses have made would be all for moot. And I don't think that's where we want to go, because that would be even more devastating than what businesses have gone through. So I think that this is where it gets to be that key partnership. And I know that there are protests being organized about people who are unhappy with their rights being violated. As the governor pointed out during his press conference this week, the more people that get out and protest, the longer these dates could potentially be set back, because the stay-at-home restrictions are a key component in allowing businesses to reopen. If you look at the whole group, the state as a whole, I think one of the challenges that we have around here is it's a positive and a negative. public health has done a great job in suppressing the amount of COVID cases that we've had. Yet, when you reopen, people are mobile. And just across the river in Winona, they've had a higher incidence. So how do you balance that, bringing people into certain areas without taking step backward when it comes to the reinfections?
Vicki, what's your reaction to this idea of balancing the needs of the public in terms of public health and the needs of people who have been devastatingly impacted by the loss of income?
I think it gets to that dial analogy, right? So your number one on the dial is not tourist attractions opening up. That's what's going to pull people from the outside, especially because everyone has cabin fever, so to speak, right now. Everybody wants to get out and do something, and they're going to become magnets for mass quantities of people. And so the idea of, you know, the one, two, threes on the dial are, how do you open up the businesses that have less interaction with people, right? So how do you open up like the earlier order did, not the safer at home order two is what we call it. The second order said, yes, you can go wash windows outside, right? Those outside jobs obviously have little impact on individuals. And so as long as they're able to physically distance, those are the type of businesses that can come back on. And then you monitor and make sure you don't have an increase in cases. And then you figure out the businesses that can be in the second dial, number two on the dial, number three on the dial. And obviously that's where, unfortunately, the bars are last on the list, is because it's really hard to walk into a bar and physically distance to the numbers that they would like to see. And I'm sure there will be innovation in bars because they want to get open too. But that's the idea, is you figure out what businesses have less impact, if you will, see how that goes, and then this is a gradual process. A little side note, I had somebody last week say, this isn't about social distancing. You don't need to be in a room with someone to be to have this apply. This is about physical distancing. So I even heard the county health department call it that today, of physical distancing, because we still are finding ways to be social, just not in the normal social ways that we're used to.
Certainly. And I've heard a lot of people transitioning toward that kind of nomenclature as well. So your point is well taken. We're physically distancing, but hopefully socially just finding different ways to connect. Let's talk about, you talked about, Vicki, the different kinds of businesses that have been affected badly by this. But are there, even under this second order that allows some more businesses to be open, are there businesses that are still closed that you think maybe leaders should reconsider allowing at least some level of activity?
Yes, I'm thinking particularly of some consulting type of work, as a wellness type of consulting type of work that could be done. Again, very limited amount of people, very controlled environment for what they're walking into, and it's more conversation and touch points within that office, so to speak. But you're not exchanging credit cards, there's no pen signings, those type of things that could adapt easily. And honestly, some of it too is, how do you start to pull people back into the workforce to say, hey, if you have fewer than 10 people, you can actually, if you're not one of those high contact places, how you could start to pull people back into a work environment again. It's a reversal of what we experienced, right? So we went from first no gatherings over 50 down to no gatherings over 10 and social and physical distancing. It's really reversing that and seeing if the numbers go up.
Chris, I want to turn back to you and talk about sort of the future. What, you know, business as usual is what everybody would like to see eventually, but what do you think the next step is in terms of what would be a positive thing for businesses that you relate to see?
Well, I think number one, just being able to have some customers and to feel that you're back doing the business that you put your heart and soul into, and that would help just to kind of get people back to work. That's what they want to do, and that is their passion. I think that much of the challenge from this will be the recovery, and you know, when all the dust settles, you know, all of our work up until this pandemic took place was, you know, we have this workforce shortage in our region. How do we get more workers here, and how do we help our businesses? Now we're going to be looking at where is the workforce shortage? Do we have a shortage? I mean, how quickly are we going to recover from this massive unemployment? And then do we then need to focus on different training because there's more acute needs in various sectors of the industry that were doing fine prior COVID, that coming out of this, we may see some totally different dynamics. So it's going to be a huge bump in that long economic growth road that we try to navigate, and we're going to have to really kind of figure that out as to how we get to that next step. I think that that we'll also be dealing with the fallout from the businesses that don't survive. You know, there will be silver linings to this because the businesses in sectors that were somehow able to scratch it out may emerge out of this doing better once the dust settles because they don't have as much competition. It may create opportunities for others to start businesses once this comes through. So we have a lot of things down the road. I think that our, you know, primary focus now is business survival. How do we try to make it as streamlined as possible to allow businesses to open up, and then figure out where we go from there?
So much is yet unknown, and yet I appreciate both of you joining us today to talk about it, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to reconvene in the future. Chris Hardy is the CEO of the Seven Rivers Alliance, and Vicki Markison is the CEO of the La Crosse Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you both very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
It's been our pleasure.
You're welcome.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. We continue our conversation after this. We're talking about education. We've got a couple of teachers from the Galesville Ettrick Trempealeau School District who are going to join us, and that's coming up. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern studios in La Crosse, and we're talking about schools today and how they're impacted by COVID-19. We heard a couple weeks ago from the La Crosse School District. This time it's the Galesville Ettrick Trempealeau School District, always known locally here as GET School District, and we're with two teachers from that district. Patty Behan is a fourth grade teacher at Trempealeau Elementary, and Jeff Bork is a seventh grade math teacher at GET Middle School. So I thank you, first of all, thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
So let me ask you, and I don't know who wants to go go first, but tell me a little bit. I know you're not district spokespeople per se, but just tell us a little bit about the Galesville Ettrick Trempealeau School District as a whole. Is there kind of a way to sum up, like, is it a small school district, a, you know, medium-sized school district, rurally located, or how would you classify it?
I can start. I think Patty probably has a better feel since she actually lives in the district, but we're a small rural community made up of three cities and three towns that go together. Patty, you just want to take over? I think you could handle that one a little bit better.
And I would say that we are even kind of a middle, even though we're three small towns that come together, we are more middle-sized. Our graduating class is around 100 kids. So, you know, our individual town, Trumplo, is maybe 1,500, Galesville about the same. So the individual towns are small, but when they come together as a high school, we're more middle-sized. There are a lot of school districts that are a lot smaller than us, and of course, many that are a lot larger, too.
Let me ask you about just each of you to reflect personally on what has been the most significant change. I mean, the obvious thing is the physical aspects of the school are closed, and so you're having to find other ways to engage with your students. But what has been the most significant change in your process in terms of handling the school day or the education of your students? You want to go, Ms. Behan?
Sure. The hardest part for me is sitting in front of a computer all day. I have to make myself, after an hour, get up, walk around, and then come back and sit down. And that's really hard. That's not how I teach, and not being able to see students face to face. Yeah, I see them over the computer every day, but that face to face and sitting, I hate it.
And being able to walk up next to them and being able to sort of gauge their body language and that kind of thing, it must be a challenge.
It is. I made a drop off the other day to a book. I dropped a book off for a student the other day and at his house, and it was so strange not to be able to go up instinctively to give him a hug. And I knew he felt it too. And so, yeah, that's just really hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. So you talked about sitting in front of a screen all day. Are all of your fourth graders there connected via some kind of video conferencing apparatus?
Yeah, they are. I'm surprised. I don't know, pleasantly surprised that all 23 of my students have internet, and I have a morning meeting every day for about 45 minutes. And of the 23, I think I had 20 there today, which is great. So I'm really happy to be able to see them every day and connect with them. You know, when the announcement came out last week that school was now canceled for the rest of the year, I said, yeah, it is, but you know that we're doing school still right here, and our building is closed for the year, but we're still working. You guys have been working hard for me, and you're continuing to work hard. And so I think that gave it some normalcy, but that was a tough day.
Mr. Bork, what about you? What's been the most significant adjustment you've had to make?
I think the biggest challenge for me has been the time commitment. Not that, like, as a teacher, we know we put in the time, but I'm like a first-year teacher again in some ways. You know, we have to reach out more. We're sending more emails. We're developing a curriculum differently. We were able to get started really quick because of all the wonderful technology that we have in our district, that we were able to get going. And 2 days in, I had some students already doing lessons. So it's been great that way. But, you know, you have to change it and make sure that it fits the, you know, whatever platform where you're using, and getting it out there and making sure kids know where to find stuff and how to do stuff and rewriting stuff so it makes sense via this way rather than talking to them in person. So it's just been that extra time, which is crazy to realize that, you know, there you need more time. But yeah, that's been my biggest challenge.
So are you doing mostly work that you hand them out digitally and they can return it back to you, or are you in a like a passing out packets kind of situation, or how does that work?
Our district introduced Schoology as a platform to use, so we've had that in our district, and we've used that as a way for kids to get materials electronically. And so I try to use that and to continue on. Now, we have the problem where some kids don't have internet. So what we've done is the district sends it out to them each week. So we have to get things together, put it, you know, a week ahead of time, and then we're sending it out to them, and they're sending it back to us. So we're working two different ways. We're working on paper, and we're working on technology. And then there's a mix in between. We've got, depending on the students and the needs, some are doing it on paper and still sending me emails, or submitting it to Schoology, or, you know, doing whatever way needs to be done in order for us to get the materials.
Patty was talking a moment ago about how impressed she was that such a high percentage of her students were able to connect digitally like that. What's the success rate been for you and your students? I know as a math teacher, you don't have the same students all day long, but how has it been connecting digitally with them? Are you video conferencing with them, or is it all strictly like a platform based? They download their lesson, they upload the answers, etc.
Well, we are using Schoology, and I do videotape instructional lessons and allow them to have like blank note outlines to go with it. But we also use Google Meet right now. And so I'm online daily with students. We arrange a time at 9:30, and then we work through questions, and I go over, different processes. And we use those also to set up if we need smaller groups or one-on-one lessons, we're doing those. And then we have a situation where students don't have, technology or they like internet, so they'll use FaceTime. And so I think that's that time commitment. We're doing just a variety of different ways to try to meet their needs.
How have, maybe Patty wants to take this one first. How have your colleagues, what have you been hearing from your friends and colleagues about how this experience has been for them and the support that they're getting from the district or the response that they're getting from the families that they're working with?
I think it's varied. I talked to my teammate last night on the phone. And Jeff, you teach math. I think that's the hardest one. I should pick your brain a little bit, because the other things we can move on, and we can, reading strategies, read a book, and reflect and give those different things maybe in a mini lesson and a video. But math, I feel, is my struggle to teach, because I would want to model it, and then the technology to fill myself and do it, that's been more difficult. So I'm sure, Jeff, it's difficult. I mean, that's amazing. I can't imagine teaching math. That would be really hard. It's the one that I struggle with the most right now, my colleague and I, but it's really helpful to get along, to meet with the other teachers at my grade level and bounce ideas off of them.
She's calling out your subject, Jeff. Tell me about how it is to teach math digitally.
Makes me feel a little overwhelmed, actually. No, it's different. I was blessed to have a colleague that I worked with for a couple of years. She since is doing something else, but she was big into, taping her lessons and video recording. So she's been a resource for me that I've used as far as the right technology to use. It's different. I have to get used to hearing my voice, when I have to play it back, which has been a little bit of a struggle, I'm not going to lie. We just keep trying different things. I know I've tried 3 or 4 different outlets and finally settled on one that works really well. And then our IT department is so awesome.
They are.
We have questions they just work their tails off. And they get us what we need. The fact that I think our district is doing really well with this, kind of comes down to them, because as soon as this started to be a rumble, everyone in my building just and across the district just hit the ground running. We met on that Sunday night before school was closed and at our building, and teachers were there and planning out stuff and rolling. And I think the majority of the students or the teachers are, all the teachers are sad we don't get to spend time with kids. But they also know this is something that we can't, prevent or whatever. So they're rolling with the punches. And I think our district's been really good about supporting us in that measure.
Well, that's good to hear. And we're going to talk about it some more after a quick timeout here on Newsmakers. We'll talk about this, including how students are doing, what the outlook is as they go into next school year. And we'll have more with our conversation with Jeff Bork, 7th grade math teacher at GET Middle School, and Patty Behan, 4th grade teacher at Tremplow Elementary, right after this. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. If you'd like to get in touch with the show today or hear a previous episode, you can check out our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. We're resuming our conversation now with Patty Behan, a fourth grade teacher at Trempealeau Elementary School, and Jeff Bork, a seventh grade math teacher at GET Middle School. And we've been talking about some of the challenges of remote learning versus the opportunity that teachers normally have to be face-to-face with their students in the classroom. So we've been talking, we were actually kind of picking on Jeff a little bit about the difficulty of teaching math remotely. But what, since you teach multiple subjects, you teach the entire fourth grade, what has been the most difficult subject besides math for you to teach remotely?
I wish I could just teach all day with my kids on Google Meet. It's just picking that one subject to focus on for the little mini lesson that I have. I think the biggest challenge, that's the biggest challenge for mine, is that I do teach all of the subjects. So then I just can't teach, I can only teach one subject today that's a mini lesson in front of them. But just moving forward with all of those subjects, that's been the hardest thing for me to let go of.
So you're conferencing with your students every day, and you're in front of the computer all day doing work related to this, but you're not necessarily conferenced in with your class of students all day long.
No, I'm not. So I meet with my students every day for 45 minutes, and then every day. And then once a week, I have a meeting with them individually once a week, where we go over their progress on their math and their writing and their reading, and their words their way, which is a spelling program. So I just feel it's just hard to give up that contact with them all day long. I think that's one of the hardest things.
What is there something that they've responded better to than you anticipated, or is there an area of study that is going particularly well?
Actually, the writing has gone really well because it's given me the time to meet with them individually through their papers. We were at a really good part in our writing program where I could let them go, and they were writing this nonfiction book. So they knew all of the components of how to do it. So actually, this break allowed me then to meet, set up a time with them, and go over all of the pages of their book with them. And I thought that was really productive. A lot of times within the school day, I don't have an hour to sit with one kid a day. And so I've been grateful about that. I think the writing part has been one area that I've been able to spend a lot more time with.
I know schools are closed for the rest of this year. And this remote learning is sort of a new experience for pretty much everybody, at least to the extent that we're doing it now. How does that affect you as teachers as you look ahead to next year? Or if you look at the benchmarks that maybe are supposed to be met by the end of this year. Jeff, you want to start with this? Do you feel like your students are going to be more or less prepared for next year, that they'll get as much out of this year's math classes as they would have under normal circumstances?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that factor into that. I think it'd be hard to say they're going to get as much as usual. Just because, you know, you lack that face-to-face time where you can really help, especially some of the students that have been struggling. We're doing our best to meet all their needs, but, you know, our goal is to get them exactly where they need to be and make sure they have everything mastered that they need to. But I think we have to be real and understand that we're going to have to do a little review work at the beginning just on some of those concepts that we missed. We're always starting to, you know, discuss that and put stuff together, and so that we can, you know, make sure we cover anything so we don't have any gaps moving forward.
Patty, what do you think about your students concluding this year or heading into next year, or maybe next year's group of students who are in the third grade this year?
Right. I think we definitely will have to review, like Jeff said, but I also want to let them know they're all in the same boat. You know, everybody throughout the state, everybody in the classroom is in the same situation. I know that I have some kids that might be a little nervous about that, and know that because we've been pedal to the metal all year long about we got to get through this stuff, especially to get through the state test. And so we've been, you know, especially in math, making sure that we hit a lesson every day and the importance of that. So I know that some might feel, oh, we're not where we should be, but everybody's in the same boat, and we'll review in the fall, and we'll get them back where they need to be.
Yeah, state testing is a whole other subject that I didn't even prepare any questions on today. It's just it's like this big whole other animal that exists out there. How is that being affected by all of this?
Well, you know, interesting. Fourth grade is the year that we test every subject, So it's a big part. And actually, you know, the month of April, we spend almost all of the month testing in some way. You know, the curriculum was affected here or there. So it's interesting how, we don't have to test. So that's one bright thing out of this, is that didn't take up the time from our curriculum.
I would agree with that. Having it like so we don't have to do it this year, has been one stress off of my plate as well.
How is attendance being measured here? I know depending on the grant program or, you know, the kind of funding your district might receive from various sources, I know attendance is important in some of those factors. How's that being counted at this time?
Well, I have 100 students that I work with, and we are not counting attendance from my understanding. What we're doing is, you know, doing check-ins weekly and recording weekly check-ins, and we're reaching out and doing that stuff. So any correspondence we're trying to record and keep track of who we're contacting in that kind of way. But as far as official attendance, I don't believe we are doing that. Patty?
Yeah, I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. No.
So what do you want, a couple of minutes we have left, what do you want either your parents or the public at large to know about what you're going through as teachers right now, how they can be of assistance to you, how they can be of assistance or provide better understanding for your students? What's important for them to know, Patty?
I think the important thing is for parents to set up a routine for their children. And I'm so grateful that my students' parents have. I'm so thankful for those students that have that solid routine and put the priority on their learning, but also important to have breaks, important to have recess and creative time and music time. But I think the biggest thing is, and it's for all of us, the students need to keep things as normal as possible, that we're learning right now. We're not in school in the building, but we are in school. We're working hard here. And if you could just help with the students set up that daily routine.
Jeff, what about you? What do you hope the public knows about what everyone involved in education is going through right now?
I personally would like to thank all my parents that I've had interactions with. The amount of emails going back and forth and the phone calls have been awesome. My thing is, and we're struggling with, is the idea that it's overwhelming because of all the different subjects at the middle school level coming at them at one time. And to be honest with you, I just want the parents to know to just do your best and do what you can. We're here to help you with whatever you're working on. I know that everybody in our district is available basically at the beck and call right now, and I mean that in a good way. Teachers are putting in time before, after normal school hours. I know they're answering emails at 9, 10 o'clock, and we ourselves are getting emails at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So as far as parents, I want to thank them, and I also want them just to continue doing what they're doing and do the best they can, and we'll work together in this time to get as much out of it as possible.
That's Jeff Bork. He's a 7th grade math teacher at GET Middle School. We've also been speaking with Patty Behan, a 4th grade teacher at Trempolo Elementary. I want to thank you both very much for what you're doing and for sticking with it on behalf of all of our students and for being here with us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. In addition to Jeff and Patty, we've also had an economic-related conversation with business leaders. We had Chris Hardy, the CEO of the Seven Rivers Alliance, and Vicki Markison, the CEO of the La Crosse Area Chamber of Commerce. And I want to thank them for joining us. If you'd like to listen to this program again or visit a previous program, you can do that on our website. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. You can subscribe to our podcast if you like. Open any podcasting platform and search for Newsmakers and subscribe that way as well. We'd love for you to be in touch with us, and we'd love for you to find those different ways to reach out to our show. My producer is John Davis, and on behalf of the rest of the staff here at WPR, I thank you for listening. We'll be back next week for another Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio.